Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Pat Boyle, joined by our Blackhawks insider, Charlie Romeliotis from NBC Sports, Chicago.com. On this episode, Kirby Doc is really close to returning to action. We'll have the very latest as Doc was a full participant at practice on Monday. How will the lines look when he returns? Is he going to be a center or will they start him on wing? We'll break it all down. Plus, the Blackhawks kick off a lengthy homestand, a six-game homestand. Eight of their next nine will be played at the United Center. What's a realistic record over those next nine games to keep them in playoff discussion? What areas do they need to clean up most to be successful and stay in the conversation for the four seed? And where was Charlie covering the Blackhawks the last week? It's all coming up next on the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Well, Charlie, big news as the Blackhawks get back to Chicago, get back to practice on Monday. Kirby Doc was a full participant in practice. He's been cleared for contact. Colleton said there are levels of contact that you need to get to, but still no timeline for his return. Do you expect to see Kirby Doc at some point during this homestand?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm watching him and it seems like he's a full go. Like there are really no restrictions. And even at practice on Monday, he was out there early with the forward group, working with the skills coach, Brian Kane. All those guys go out about 20 minutes early and they work on some things. Then actual practice occurs. And then Kirby goes on the other end of the rink with some of the scratches and they're doing some drills. And even after I peeked over, because we were doing the Jeremy Colleton Zoom calls at the time and Kirby was working on faceoffs. So like, it doesn't appear to be anything, like nothing is really hindering right now. And I feel like it's conditioning at this point. And I would honestly be surprised, like he sure looks like he's ready to return like very soon. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's at some point this week.
Yeah, I'm with you. I looked at how he played or how, you know, he participated in practice today. You asked the question to Jeremy how he would be used when he returns. They want him to be a center. That's what they see him as. He may not take all the draws, but that was something that, you know, he didn't necessarily do all the time last year. So it looks like I think he's really, really close. And I think Tuesday might be a little bit of a stretch, but I think there's a shot Thursday could be the first game.
Yeah. And if it's not Thursday, certainly the weekend where they play Saturday and Sunday. Like I know I'm saying certainly here as if it's a done deal, but this isn't like, you know, his wrist looks fine. Like he's passing all these tests. And obviously we should actually preface this too, saying this was our first practice that we're getting to watch him. So like he could have been doing this on the road and we just had no idea. So for us, we're kind of looking at him like, wow, like I think I would be a little bit more hesitant if it was maybe a lower body injury where he couldn't stay active and couldn't keep his cardio levels up, but he's been skating since like early February. So this isn't something where he's slowly getting ramped up. It's really the strength in the wrist and just making sure that he's game ready. And he sure looks like it as far as a conditioning standpoint, or he's going to get there really soon.
What did you make of Jeremy saying that there's levels of contact? You know, he's been cleared for contact, but there are levels. I mean, obviously you're not going crazy in practice, but I assume if he's cleared for contact, there's not another level you need to get to be cleared for game contact.
Right. I think he's just being cautious because he knows if he says he's cleared for contact, that means all systems is a go, to be honest with you. And maybe they're just being cautious with the wording saying, you know, it's, we're slowly ramping him up and we're giving him more, and that's encouraging. So it might be a little bit, you know, political speak just because they don't want to put too much pressure on when he could return. But yeah, I mean, just watching him at practice, like I didn't see him, the team was doing one drill and he was kind of on the side doing the other. Like, he was a full go before, during, and after practice.
I tell you what, the Hawks really need him. The center depth chart has been ultimately tested over the last few weeks. And like, we've seen everybody skate with DeBrincat and Kane, of course, Pugh Suter and Kuryshev doing a lot of that. But lately we saw David Kampf. And then on Monday in practice, we saw Wallmark in 3-on-3 drills skating with Kane and DeBrincat. Did that lead you to believe that Wallmark may center that line against Florida on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I don't know. That I feel like that would be a stretch, especially coming off that, you know, he was scratched during the road trip too. So unless, you know, the Blackhawks are kind of ramming, I don't think they're doing this because they're in a playoff push right now. But if they want to give him a larger role, if they want to like showcase a guy like Lucas Wallmark ahead of the trade deadline, maybe that's something they do. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Kirby Dach when he comes back. And I think the interesting part of the equation is the fact that they moved Dylan Strome to wing, right? It's like, if you had Dylan Strome as like the third line center or the second line center, you're like, okay, well, he doesn't have any wingers that he can play with because Kirby is likely to play on the first line with DeBrincat and Kane. So the fact that they moved Dylan Strome to the wing makes me believe maybe there might be a chance where they spread the wealth with DeBrincat and Kane on the first line, Strome and Dach on the second. But at the same time, Pat, we watched the bubble, how effective that DeBrincat, Dach, and Kane line was. Man, I would roll with it. I would overload that first line, make teams defend it, and then you can move maybe Pia Suter to the wing on the second line, and that way you kind of balance things out. So they're going to have options, and I'm curious to see what Jeremy Colliton and the staff does when Kirby is ready to.
I think ideally you would want Dach, like you said, between DeBrincat and Kane. I don't know if out of the gates they're going to think that might be too much. Probably that first game, it for sure, maybe a couple games where they'd want him more in a second line center role or possibly a third line center role. But yeah, it's really going to be interesting to see how they insert him into the lineup. But it's truly needed, especially when they go up against like bigger teams like, you know, Barkov, that line. Now, of course, the Hawks will have last change, so that should help Jeremy Colliton and the Blackhawks get some more favorable matchups. But that road trip when you know, a Florida or a Tampa team decided to put their top line out there, and you know, it made for some difficult times for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're not necessarily just talking about faceoffs, because the Blackhawks have gotten dominated in that department as of late, but just breaking out of their own end like that. The Kane and DeBrincat line, they were pretty quiet starting with that Dallas series where they got, you know, really shut down. And you know, so I definitely agree that's going to help. And Kirby was a guy that even in the postseason bubble, he was a guy that was playing on the first power play unit, but also on the penalty kill. So like, that could also be like, the penalty kill was really struggling too, ever since that kind of really hot stretch. They've been struggling too. So even just generating some sort of momentum, but I agree, at 5-on-5, like, you need a guy like Kirby Dach to break out of your own end and to really generate momentum coming into the offensive zone with speed, and then just keeping the puck in the offensive zone too. Like, it's tough because David Kampf is on that line, and you knew what you obviously saw what the Blackhawks were thinking there. They got dominated at the faceoff circle by Barkov. And so Kampf is on that line to really help in their own end. But when they get into the offensive zone, David Kampf is not a guy. And he did, credit to him, he created a scoring chance on that goal that led to the Patrick Kane goal. But he's not a guy that's going to keep the puck in the offensive zone. So having a guy like Kirby Dach to go with Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane, like, that could be a dominant line for the Blackhawks and really change the complexion of things going forward.
The Blackhawks are going to recognize Patrick Kane's 1,000th game. They'll do that before Tuesday night's contest. It seems like that Dallas 1,000th game was like a month ago. I know it was a few weeks ago, but I think it's going to be kind of low-keyed. I think his parents will be there. I would assume maybe his sisters will be there. Hopefully Amanda and the baby probably will be there, some sort of video tribute. But I think it's going to be somewhat understated, and I think Patrick's going to want it truly to be recognized when the United Center is back to capacity.
Yeah, it's a little weird. When Sidney Crosby had his 1,000th game, it was in Pittsburgh, and they did a video tribute, and Patrick Kane was actually one of the guys that spoke in the video, and Sidney Crosby actually returned the favor and had a little video message for Patrick Kane that the Blackhawks put on their website. So it'll be a nice little gesture, I'm sure, at home. But yeah, Patrick, I'm sure, is looking forward to kind of celebrating that milestone with, you know, a jam-packed United Center when it's safe to do so.
It's weird that once again, Joel Quenneville is behind the bench on a night that he's being honored. So like when he was honored for his 1,000th point last season, it was right before that bye, and they laid an absolute egg in that game. And I mean, part of that is Joel. Like, he knows how to, I'm not going to say shut down Kane, but he knows how to defend against him. You take a look at some of the analytics, the numbers. Florida versus Kane this year versus Kane versus the rest of the Central Division. And you realize that, yeah, I know Florida's got a good team, but I think that coach has a little something to do with it as well.
Yeah. And they do a really good job at denying entries. Tampa, especially, like I'm pretty sure they're actually number one in the league at denying entries. And so when Kane is one of the league's best at entering the zone, like, he's up there in all those metrics, but when he's not getting into the offensive zone or when those entries are being denied, it's tough for him and that line to really get set up in the offensive zone. So yeah, Joel Quenneville, it is kind of bizarre. And it's actually funny too, because Patrick, obviously that was a dud, the 1,000th point with the night he was being honored. And also the game that Patrick Kane played, the 1,000th game, that was probably the worst game of the year. And it was like the most forgettable game, I'm sure, for Patrick Kane to want to remember his 1,000th game on.
So 8 of the next 9 games for the Blackhawks are at the United Center. It starts with 2 against Florida, then 2 against Nashville, 2 against Carolina. The only road appearance is April 3rd at Nashville, and then they're back home for 2 against Dallas. What do you think is a realistic record over the next 9 games to keep them in the playoff discussion? Because remember, right now, Columbus and the Blackhawks have the exact same number of points, same number of games played, but Columbus owns the 4 seed because they have more regulation wins than the Blackhawks. So what do you think they need to do over the next 9 to keep them in this 4 seed discussion?
Yeah, I think ideally you'd love to take six of nine. Well, I'm not even going to go with points, because there are some teams in there, which, by the way, I thought Columbus was totally in the rearview mirror, and suddenly they're I thought Dallas was the team that the Blackhawks really had to stave off. But the fact that Columbus is now, I don't know if it's legit or not, because they're on a 5-game point streak right now, but it's against those lesser teams. And I think all 3 of those wins came in overtime or a shootout. So I wouldn't necessarily be worried about Columbus, but the fact that they've already jumped into that 4 spot, now we have, you know, now the Blackhawks have to worry about him about Columbus and the Dallas Stars. So I think there's a real opportunity here. I'm looking at that Nashville series as well as an important one. The Blackhawks lost their first 2 games against Nashville, and they came in overtime or in shootout. So they picked up points, but like, Nashville is one of the worst teams in the league. They have one of the worst goal differentials in the league. And so you have to take care of those types of points, especially given that Florida and Carolina are on this schedule.
So you say take 6 of 9. I went with little 5-3-1 action, something like that. If they can stay a couple above 500, I think they'll pick up points, because honestly, if you look at the teams below the Hawks, Nashville, Dallas, Detroit, all of them have below 500 records over their last 10 games. And only Columbus checks in, like you said, with a 5-3-2 mark in their last 10. So they're not exactly world beaters. It's those 3 atop the Central that seemingly the Hawks have, you know, played ad nauseum here the last month. But that are just absolutely head and shoulders above everybody in the division. But it's going to be, and I still think Dallas has, I mean, they're 10-10-8. They've only played 28 games. They're the only team in the bottom half that has a positive goal differential. They're at +5. So I do think they could make some noise here, but we keep saying that and they kind of still stay in that seven seed spot.
Right. Yeah. You look at it and they have four games in hand on the Blackhawks and they're only 5 points away. So essentially they would really just need 6 of 8 points to leapfrog the Blackhawks. So Dallas controls their own destiny right now. When you think about it, even on Columbus, but yeah, it's weird because they haven't won back-to-back games in regular. They haven't won back-to-back games, I'm pretty sure, since winning four in a row to start the season. So somehow Dallas is still in this and they're just hovering around. But it's going to be interesting. I think when we're talking about the Floridas, the Carolinas, the Tampa Bays, I think it's going to be difficult for them to really pick up wins in those series. So like, as long as I think what made the road trip so unfortunate is the fact that they lost six of the last seven games in regulation. Like they weren't able to pick up points even though they did. And that's going to be difficult. Like, I don't know if they can go through this stretch because they're going to have Ford again. They're going to have Carolina again. They have three straight games against, actually, I'm looking at it. They have six games. It's against Tampa, Florida twice, and then Carolina three times towards the end of the year. So like, you have to pick up points against those teams, maybe not necessarily win, but against those bottom feeder teams, you certainly have to pick up 2 points.
What areas do you think they need to clean up most here on this homestand to get back in this four spot? I think if you look at it, they deserve probably better than they got on the road trip. I think they played better than what the record indicates. I think those teams outskill the Blackhawks. And when there were some lapses or momentum shifts, the Hawks just weren't able to handle it. I think with this upcoming schedule, the talent other than Florida is not, it's not too much for the Blackhawks to handle. So, you know, I think I like, for the most part, their compete level. They're the best when they're forechecking and backchecking and creating turnovers and winning 50-50s. And, you know, they can't take any nights off. they have to look at the opponent that they're playing as they are playing Florida or Tampa. If they play like they did in most of those games, not all of them, but most on this road trip, this past road trip, I think they will have, you know, a 5-win or 6 wins over the next 9.
Right. The common theme that I saw I've seen lately of the Blackhawks, it's been those quick strikes where how many times are we watching a Blackhawks game where they're up by 2 goals or whatever, and then the opponent scores 2 goals in a minute and 30 or 3 goals in 4 minutes. And then it's like, they don't like even that first Tampa game or when they were at the United Center, like the Black, like they were clearly in control of the game. And then Tampa scores twice in the blink of an eye. And you're like, wait a second, this game just quickly got away from them. So I think it's tough. I wrote about this during the road trip, is like the Blackhawks, their A game is good enough, but like they can't afford to have their B game against, like Tampa can beat you on their B game. Like,
yes,
no question. Like they have an,
or maybe their C plus game,
maybe even their C plus game, especially with that goaltender too. He's
incredible,
out of his mind. And so like those teams, Tampa Bay, they can coast. Like Chicago remembers it. The Blackhawks in the dynasty era got away with playing their B games. And most night it was better than the other team's A game. So the Blackhawks can't afford that. They need to play their A games, especially against those elite teams. They might be able to win their B game against teams like Nashville and Detroit. But like when you're facing Florida and Tampa, those quick mental lapses are just going to beat you. And then you're playing catch up the rest of the game.
Well, and the other thing is when you are playing your non-A game, say your B game, you can stay afloat or stay competitive, stay in the hockey game if special teams, you're making up for it there, or your goaltending is elite. And that was the formula that got them off to the great start. The power play was clicking. The penalty kill wasn't great, but you were scoring so much more on the man advantage that you were winning the special teams battle most nights. And then the goaltending was fantastic. you look at the goals allowed, and I'm not putting this on all on Lankinen or Subban, but it's certainly been different net minding over the last 10 to 12 games than the first 11 that we saw this season.
Right. And it's tough too, because we do have to point out that this Blackhawks roster is just full of rookies, right? And so they're not used to playing this grinding of a season. Now, I know it's not 82 games, but it's basically a game every other day. And the Blackhawks can't afford to take nights off. Like Tampa Bay, they know they're going to be in the playoffs and they know they're mentally preparing for a Stanley Cup run. So they're able to kind of coast both mentally and physically during the regular season. The Blackhawks can't do that. Like they have to play, they have to work hard every single game to earn their points. And that's mentally and physically exhausting. And I think that's also another reason why we're kind of seeing the Blackhawks sprinkle in some more optional skates and more optional practices and lessening the load, because some of these young players are going to be get driven into the ground if they don't have those mental recharges and physical recharges.
April 12th is the trade deadline in the NHL, and we're going to have a lot of podcast discussion leading up to that. I want to just kind of get your overall thought, because the road trip to Florida kind of has changed my approach to the trade deadline. So first I want to hear from you kind of where you stand. If the Hawks remain in this four seed vicinity, whether it's at it within 2 to 3 points of it, what is your game plan if you were advising the Blackhawks for leading up to the trade deadline?
Right. So I would essentially keep the roster intact. The only thing I would do is the only subtractions I would make from the roster would be if there are pieces that are getting moved in and out of the lineup, like a guy like Lucas Walmart. Like he's been a healthy scratch. He's like, if some team comes calling, now you're not going to get much for him, but I'm saying if some team comes call, you can replace a guy like Lucas Walmart into the lineup and, you know, have a Matthew Highmore in there, especially when Kirby Dach comes back. Now you have an expendable bottom six forward, but it's going to be interesting because I think the one guy that I'm most curious about is Matthias Janmark. Like that's the guy that probably has the most value. Like he's having a career year offensively and he's proving it. What, you know, if the Blackhawks get offered a first round pick for him, I would certainly accept that. But it seems like more it's going to be in the range of like a second or third round pick. And at what point is that, you know, I don't know if that's worth it. I would just keep it.
I think it is, Charlie. I really think a second round pick for Matthias Janmark. You can get Alex DeBrincat in the second round. Look back to the trade with Ryan Hartman to Nashville. Now there's another player that came back, but they got a 1 and a 4. That fourth round pick turned into Kurashev.
Yep.
The first round pick became Boudin. Now, obviously, you're not going to get that kind of return for Matthias Janmark. I don't think Matthias's stock is ever going to be higher than it is right now. I mean, he's been in basically a top six, top nine role all season long for the Blackhawks. And, you know, he's got double digit goals. He's got 10 goals. And, you know, he's been given an opportunity and he's made the most of it. He's got a great track record last year in the bubble in the postseason. That bodes well. And the fact that he's only making, two point two. So that's prorated, $2.2 million, and it's an expiring contract. I know they tend to like players that have one more year left on their deal sometimes, but again, I would have thought they would have got more for Robin Leonard last year at the trade deadline. But we'll see. If they get a second round offer, I would do it. And I struggled with this because I'm like, look, this team has exceeded expectations. They fought really hard. You know, they've been work ethic driven. That's the only reason why they're in the spot they are. What are you really saying to them if you take, you know, one of the guys that, you know, carried that mantle, take him away and, you know, possibly hurt their chances of making the playoffs? But then I looked at this road trip and the gap is so vast between in talent, between Tampa's top four lines and our four lines. Like, you just go back at it. And the only way to make up that talent gap is through the draft. And I want more draft equity, more possibilities to do that. And the majority of my team, 19 to 22 or 23 years of age, I'm not necessarily in win now mode. I know fans don't like to hear that, but if you could get a second rounder for Yanmark, and that doesn't mean you couldn't sign Yanmark in the offseason as well.
Yeah. And that's what I really struggle. That's what I struggle with the most, is because the Blackhawks were in this position a year and a half ago when Erik Gustafsson was coming off a career year and everyone was saying, trade him now, like in the offseason. They're like, trade him now when his value is at its highest. But then if you trade a guy like that, what message are you sending in the locker room? Because Adam Boqvist was not ready at the time, right? Like, they didn't have a puck. I mean, he was a 60-point player, and the Blackhawks went out and signed Robin Leonard. They went out and traded for Callum DeHaan and Olli Maatta, and they were making moves to want to make a playoff push. They weren't necessarily in rebuild mode as they are now. So I guess you could sell me on that second-round pick. That's just tough, though. Like, if they're sitting in a playoff spot or if they're hovering around it, like, it's a tough message to send in the locker room that we're going to subtract from this roster, even though they deserve to be in this hunt. I think the only way I would entertain it is if we all know the Blackhawks are going to have $20+ million in cap space, is if they take on a bad contract and acquire some future assets like draft capital or prospects. If that bad contract is actually a decent player, is just way overpaid, then I would say, okay, like, I would take the second round pick and get a guy, you know, like, I don't know, I can't even think of anyone off the top of my head, but where you can actually, you can get the second round pick, also get draft capital for that overpaid player that's on an expiring contract, but he could also contribute to the team in some way. And he's not just a throwaway stash, you know, as your 13th forward. So that's something I guess we're going to have to monitor. But I agree. Like, when you look at the road trip, you know, the Blackhawks aren't up to par with these teams, but there's something to be said for getting this young group some valuable playoff experience, particularly the goaltenders too.
Yeah. No, here's my rationale there. So I'm with these, this would be tough discussion with Keith and with Kane. Those would be tough discussions, but I would say to them, look, guys, you played Tampa 8 times. You played Florida 8 times. We beat them, you know, as of now, once in regulation. So, like, that was your, you know, you want to know how they're going to do in the playoffs against them? I'm going to tell you, it's not much different than what it was in the regular season. I mean, especially the way these games were played. I mean, that felt it wasn't playoff intensity by any means, but Tampa really wanted payback and retribution for what happened on March 7th with Connor Murphy. That's, I think, reason why they started Vasilevsky on Saturday and sent McElhinney to the crease on Sunday against Florida. I think they really, I'm just guessing again, I don't think, you know, and I think Colleton's remarks before, I mean, to me, there was some intensity to it. And that's what these 2-game series and playing a team like that the Hawks played Tampa, you know, 5 times in a matter of less than 2 weeks. So I do think it creates some of that, the hostilities that you get. I would just say, guys, look at what the results were when we went head to head against them. It really is not close. If we ultimately know we need to get to that level, the best way to do it is, unfortunately, to let Yanmark or Calvin DeHaan or whatever maybe go acquire assets. We could still go get Yanmark back in the off season if we really think he's a part of, you know, the future. But look what we can do through the draft. And then again, the other part of this is it's a funky draft. Because half of these leagues have played minimal games. Some of the leagues haven't even started yet. So, you know, now you're telling me you're getting draft capital for a draft that is going to be unlike any other year.
Yeah, they're basically going off a year footage, you know, and they don't know how these players are going to be projected or what their timelines could be for the NHL. And I think that's a big reason why there was so much discussion about postponing the draft to, you know, skip it or push it back so we can see that, you know, teams can see and scout those players in the playoffs. So it's going to be interesting, Pat. Like, I do think, like, if they get swept away from Janmark, like, I would say yes, but I'm not necessarily looking, you know, maybe I put my bobber in the water and see like who's biting and what teams are offering, but I'm not necessarily saying we're moving Janmark. Give us your best offer. So I think we'll have to see how these next, you know, this next week or two, I guess, play out, especially given that, you know, Nashville's on the schedule, Dallas on the schedule, then Columbus is on the schedule literally right before the trade deadline. But the tough part is a lot of these Canadian teams want to make moves like soon because there's a quarantine order.
Right.
And we see, you know, we saw Pierre-Luc Dubois get traded to Winnipeg and he had to sit for 2 weeks and he really hasn't made that type of impact yet. And so you wonder how much that has impacted things. Like Matthias Janmark is a guy, I was on an Edmonton radio station a few weeks ago and they're like, we would have loved Janmark if he came here. So like, I don't know, maybe that's a team that if they're looking at a guy like Janmark, they would want to make that move now so that he could be set up, you know, for their stretch run earlier than later.
Should be interested in follow that. We'll be all over it for you. Any parting shots, any one-timers, anything you got? I mean, can we tell people where you were the last week or where were you? Where were you, Charlie?
I was off the grid and I was actually in Florida. I was not covering the team though. I was covering it from afar, but I think Chicago will agree. I'm not allowed to go to Florida when the Blackhawks are in Florida again, because that road trip was not pretty for the Blackhawks, but I did get a nice little tan. I got a nice little sunglass mark here over my nose. So it was a good trip.
Yeah. I mean, you were literally the only person associated with the Blackhawks who had had fun in Florida over the last week and change. So good. And look, I got to share the story. So last Tuesday, I don't remember. They all blur together. But we were getting our last little bit of snowstorm situation here in Chicago. And I was driving into work and I responsibly pulled over to the side of the road and took a picture. Now, I took a picture with my phone and texted Charlie and said, look at the scenery I have driving into work. And within 2 seconds, Charlie sends back a text and it's a picture of, you know, the Gulf of Mexico and a dolphin. He's like, I just saw a dolphin. And I'm like, okay, all right, enough.
It was
wounds.
Yeah. I debated sending it, but I'm like, I'm going to send it because maybe you can live vicariously through my pictures.
Yeah, no, that I wish we could somehow move the pregame show to alternate spots every once in a while, but that was good. Good to have you back. And, again, we'll see what happens. A critical 6-game homestand coming up. It starts on Tuesday night. Once again, Patrick Kane will be honored and recognized for his 1,000th game. His family will be on hand. We'll carry that for you live on NBC Sports Chicago. Pregame begins at 6:30. For Charlie Romeliotis, for Tony Gill, and everybody who works hard on the hockey podcast, including Jeff Nelson, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate us, and we'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast, brought to you by Coors Light.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths, and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.